Okay, before I start, I want to ask you, what attribute of God has been an anchor for you in the last week, the last month, the last year? What attribute of God has been an anchor for you in the last period of time? Just shout it out. Mercy. Loving kindness. Immutability. His provider, Jehovah Jireh, in a generation that knows only Jehovah Visa. And we've got to know who is Jireh. One lady said, I never heard of Jehovah Visa. I said, he's in your purse. She said, oh, I get it. And so we see the providing hand of God. Okay, what else? Couple more. Goodness. Faithfulness. That's what we just sang. Mercy is new every morning. One more. Holy. It's a good way to begin your day. I remember when freshmen used to come into Northland, we started their first 2 weeks emphasizing building their biography of God. I said, it's not knowing just about God, it's knowing Him. And if you just know about Him and never know Him, there's not going to become that potential. And Dr. Pettit preached on Monday to be a reflector of what our God is really like. We need to know Him in detail. And so when we look at that, and it's a privilege for me to be here. I really appreciate Dr. Cushman taking a chance on having somebody with no IQ to preach. But I think how desperately what you are doing here is needed in this world. Do you realize you are the only one that has the answer to the confusion of a world that is going headlong into hell? What part will you play in that? I appreciate a brother bringing his grandson. I told him. We need you. Churches, pulpits empty nationwide. Mission fields, missionaries leaving, missionaries quitting, because the attack is real. I tell businessmen, when you go to work, you go to work. When a pastor gets up, he goes to warfare, because he is sticking his head out into that kingdom of darkness, and it is going to get sawed on. But we have the greatness of God who is dwelling within us. Greetings from my wife. 58 years ago, we married and started ministry together. We have been in the ministry trench for 58 years together. And as we look at the times, there were highs, there were lows, there were deep heartaches, there were great rejoicings. But God never was not faithful in all of that. So I want us to look at Hebrews chapter 11, because when we look at the condition of the world today, you look at Old Testament parallel, and even if you just took the book of Ezekiel, when the nation was coming under the judgment of God, Ezekiel chapter 22, the prophet stopped prophesying. The priest became unholy, and there was no difference between the holy and the unholy, because they mingled everything together. The politicians were crooked, abusing the people, and the people became like the politicians. They were abusing those, even their neighbors. And God said in verse 30, and I looked for a man. The instrument of God's search was a man. The intent was to what? Stand in the gap. What was the indictment? I found none. And I sure hope that we are not coming into that era today, because we look at the call. We need pastors. We need missionaries. We need school teachers. We need those who are passionate to see God's name be uplifted and God's name be glorified in this world, in this generation today. And so as we look at the challenge, I want to take one man and take the life as a model of a leader in a time of great need. Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll look in verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproaches of Christ greater than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea and by dry land, which the Egyptians, the saying to do, were drowned. I'm going to take, if you do a personal study of this, focus only on the verbs. How should I live? How should I choose? What should I do? And we see, I want to focus on four words that we learned from the leadership of Moses. One is evaluation. Another is determination. Another is elimination. And then continuation. These are the four characteristics that I picked out from these verbs that describe the life of Moses. And Moses had no easy task. When you stop to think of what God had assigned him to do, first 40 years of his life, he was learning he was a somebody. The next 40 years, he learned he was a nobody. And God took that nobody who used to be a somebody and did something for God's glory with him. And it was a warfare. Finally, he lost his temper, lost the privilege of going in it. You know, as we get older, sometimes our patience gets a little worn, a little more thin as well, as we get along that way. But what is characteristic? First of all, note the evaluation that he did. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. What was he doing at this point? Keep in mind, he had been adopted as Pharaoh's child, which meant potentially he could have become the next Pharaoh. And when you stop to look at what potential that was, you'll see that he made an evaluation. Long term, he had the long view. There are two ways to live your life. One is short-term pleasure, long-term pain. The other is short-term pain, long-term pleasure. Moses chose the latter. Remember, my wife and I were doing a couple's conference. It was a retreat at Northland Camp. And I got back on Friday night back to the house. It was a Friday night, Saturday retreat. And I stayed longer and I got home and my wife said, "Did you see anyone there tonight who looked disinterested?" I said, "There was one guy, if looks could kill, he'd be a mass murderer." I said, "I quit looking his way. I'm insecure as it is without looking at." He said, "Well, I think that's whose wife talked to me. She said he really needs to talk to you." So I got dressed again. I went back over to the dining hall and I walked in there. It was probably 10:30 at night. And the ladies were in one corner. They saw me come in. They knew why I came in. And I sat down at the table and this guy came over to me. And he said, "How much time do you have?" I said, "As much time as you need." He pulled out his wallet. He showed me his degree from Bob Jones. He showed me his master's degree from Pillsbury. He showed me an MDiv he got from Central Seminary. And he showed me, and they were all shot down to wallet size. And he said, "I planted three churches. One of the three that I planted became one of the five fastest growing churches in the United States." He said, "I did not want to be here at this conference." In fact, he had called the state police to have the police say in the spring, the roads are too bad, don't go out. He said, I'm not in ministry anymore. He said, I advertised my library for sale. I had the third largest library in Minneapolis. He said, I not only have a wife, I have a girlfriend. He said, I left the ministry. And he said, I did not want to be here. And he said, go ahead and get your Greek Testament. He said, I'll quote the book of James to you in Greek. This guy was brilliant. He said, but something was happening to me in my undergrad and in my graduate work. He said, I started peeking at pornography. He said, the peak became a greater controller, and the greater controller began to dominate my life. He said, it led to bad choices, more bad choices, more bad choices. And he said, I'm a mess. If anybody could have had a powerful ministry, he had a great personality, a great mind. And I said, I think what happened to you was you added to faith knowledge and you bypassed virtue. I said, you get saved. You not only have to have salvation as a base, then you have to come to a point where you have to make decisions. Are you going to choose pleasure now and pain later, or pain now and pleasure later, learning how to say no to your flesh? And he said, well, I started slowly, and it gained momentum, and it gained momentum. Did not make the evaluation of the long haul. Did not make the evaluation of the long term that was there in front. And as you in your stage of learning, you in your preparation for here, as the world is in such need, the mission fields and the pulpits in America, how many empty pulpits in America? My wife and I just did a leadership meeting in San Francisco, and you want your heart broken. I'm supposed to go back there and preach evangelism from the Good Friday through Easter Sunday. And whatever you've read about San Francisco, you can triple it. The hotel where Charlene and I stayed, everything came up, the drug needle, the whole thing came right up to the doors where we were getting out of the streets, just lined and lined with these homeless. And one of the students here, I talked to him yesterday, he was on a summer team there with Dr. Innes and that group in San Francisco. He said, I talked to one guy out on the street. He said, gave witness to him. He said, would you like your life to change? He said, why would I? He said, everything is paid for. They gave us money. They gave us drugs. They gave us free needles. They gave us this. And he said, why would I want to change? And I saw that with my own eyes. And you know what? Thank the Lord for that team from Bob Jones, Zeta Chi, by the way. That was my old society. I said, let's go. Go after it. But they were on those streets all summer, ministering, giving the word, giving the truth. Evaluation. Are you doing evaluation? And then it says, choosing rather. Now we see determination. We see the word choosing. Now you have to come to a point where you have to come up with a determination, and along with that determination is the word refused. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So if a leader is going to be the leader God wants him to be after his evaluation of the long view, evaluation of the eternal view, there has to be a determination, and choosing is that verb. What am I going to choose? Choices determine consequences. Lot chose. Based on what? He lifted his eyes. Lot lifted. Lot chose. And Lot pitched. And what you are doing now in your determination, and in this determination, we see he was esteeming. What was he esteeming? The riches of what Pharaoh had to offer compared to the eternal riches. And you have to keep that in mind. When you are here in your training time and you're saying, God, you have to provide our needs and you have to be the one who is my supplier. I remember when we pastored here in that early church plant and I signed our checks back to the church. I knew they couldn't afford keep the mission budget going and keep the building payment going. And I just signed the checks back. I said, we'll trust God. Charlene said, I said, honey, check what's in the checkbook and let's write it totally empty today and put it in the offering. And she was not complaining. She was only reporting. And she said, there won't be anything left for groceries this week. I said, let's let God take care of that. A Volkswagen pulls up in my yard and the guy gets out and he said, God told me to come here with groceries. I said, who are you? He said, that's not important. I'm just obeying God. Unloaded his car, filled our kitchen table with groceries. I told Charlene, it wasn't an angel, not driving a Volkswagen like that. Heaven's not that bad off. Then I get a phone call. How are your finances? I said, we haven't starved yet. I said, we're okay. He said, well, I just bought a new car. I want to give you my other car. Do you want it? I said, yes, I'll take. Sold the car we are driving for $850. And then I got a $150 check in the mail. 1 week later, we were $1,000 richer. That was in 1960 whatever. When $1,000 meant something. Not just going to Starbucks, but it meant something. In the good hand of God. Good hand of God. You say, God, we can trust you. It doesn't mean you need to quit everything and give everything yourself empty, but there's a determination, choosing. No, look at the word elimination. A leader evaluates, a leader determines, and a leader eliminates. There are certain things you have to eliminate from your life. And it says the word rather, choosing rather. Now, there are a lot of choices that you have to make in life, and you have to choose rather. And that rather you choose is that which would lean you towards God's best or what is better for you for the long-term goal and for the long-term glory of God in that context. Choosing rather to what? Suffer affliction. And I'm going to tell you what, we told a preacher or that Christian ministry class yesterday, you had better get braced to suffer in the United States of America as a believer. When Marxism gets in high gear, we will be silenced unless you make a determination that you are going to suffer for the cause of Christ. As I shared yesterday, a lady in Finland, she's a medical doctor, and that's my background, medical doctor and a member of parliament, but she dared write an article saying that God created male and female. She is on trial as we sit here with the high potential of her going to prison. In Finland, she said, what happened to our religious freedom? What happened to freedom of speech? Those of you who are going into pastoral ministry, and I think some of the reasons why these pulpits are emptying, because they're looking forward. I was just with a pastor in Illinois. He said, my son-in-law is looking at perhaps taking his church. He said, I don't know that he is quite ready to know what he is going to face from the authorities in this city if he just plain preaches the Bible. You know why? Because you have cancel culture going in high gear. And you have to make your determination that God's will for you is more important than anything else that you do. And God can protect you. And God can provide for you. So there is elimination. And then, I better hasten here or I will be eliminated. And continuation. There is continuation. So we see that he went, verse 26, esteeming the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, he had respect unto the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, fearing not the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who... Well, see that word endured? He endured as seeing him who was in... How did he endure? Kept his gaze on Christ. A staff we hired several years ago in a rather high position, and he could see that the pressures of leadership... you think the title of president, that'd really be something that's a headache. That's all it is. If you're president, it's a headache. And you get the craziest letters and the craziest. I got a letter from a pastor wanting to know my position on Santa Claus. That didn't hit me right. So I dictated my secretary. I said, he's an overweight man who has been very good to me through the years. And I said, don't send that. I said, that was my flesh. So I went into Revelation at the ho, 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 the voice of many waters. And I got biblical. No, I didn't do that either. And the shiny buckles. I'm like, boy, I could really come up with a message on Santa there from Revelation. So I answered it in a way that I thought was good. But what in the world? Trying to get something done here. What's your position on Santa Claus? And this staff came to me and said, Les, how do you stay encouraged? You're getting hammered from this one. You're getting hammered from that one. I said, all my ministry, I've tried to have three blinders. Number one blinder, keep your passion for Christ growing. And that means intimacy and alone time with God. That means solitude with God. And that's what Moses had in those 40 days, two times on the mountain, solitude. And they're at Horeb, and the glory of God passed by. Moses had that solitude. Same thing Elijah had to experience. I think Saul of Tarsus, after he became a believer, he had to take that time of solitude. Keep your passion for Christ growing. Number two, keep your eye on your mission. Keep your eye on your mission. Why are you here? When our boys played hockey, I was driving one to his game, and he said, Dad, what are you doing? Any of you have ever played hockey, you know the intensity of that. And you're in the front, and he said, you're getting poked, and you're getting whacked, and the only unprotected place on your back of your leg. And I said, how do you win games? He said, teamwork. I said, we'll talk to pious stuff later. How did the score get 1-0? He said, the puck has to go in the net. I said, that's it. Put the puck in the net and let the heathen rage. That's what you're out there for. Put the puck in the net. No, if you react to the pokes, you're going to do this, and you're going to end up in a sin bin. Now it's 5-on-4. And I said, in ministry, it's the same thing. You get poked. You're constantly getting poked. And the sad thing is you're getting poked from people who should be on their knees praying for you. But you're getting poked and poked and poked. And you could come like this and end up in a sin bin for a while until you can get back. No, keep your focus. Why are you there? A basketball player is out there to put the ball in the hoop. I remember our girls' basketball team. I was at one of our games, and they missed layups. Monday, I went to my secretary. I said, pull up your Bible program. And I said, every place the word layup appears, type the verse and send it to all the girls' basketball team. Love, Doc O. And we did. And I got so frustrated. Make a layup, for Pete's sakes. Maybe you need to get in a weight room. I don't know what, but, I get, well. Keep your eye on your mission. And then number three, keep your relationships right as much as is humanly possible. Because when there is a broken relationship, you know what happened? Our power plug is pulled. We're grieving and quenching the Holy Spirit. And all we do is function, though. But no fruit and no freedom within your own soul. And I said, those are the three blinders that I have tried to keep. And you have the continuation that comes through that. And look what it says. Through faith, verse 28, he kept the Passover. There was the picture of coming Calvary and the sprinkling of the blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed. Note that verb. Passed through, on their way, going through on dry land, which the Egyptians are saying to do, were drowned. Long view, the long view. What will it take to knock you out of the water? I remember the 2004 Summer Olympics. A Brazilian runner, Vanderlei de Lima, was in the original course where the marathon was run in Athens, 2004 Summer Olympics. And in Athens, the course that was original was there. And this Vanderlei de Lima, the Brazilian runner, was so far ahead. I remember the commentator saying that he has his gold won, because he was so far ahead with about 4 miles or so left to go. And many of you might remember this if you're a little older. The madman came out of the people who were lined along that course, and he tackled Vanderlei de Lima in the race, was trying to pull him out of the race, and de Lima was kicking to get loose, and many of the others pulled this maniac away, and de Lima got back in the race. Baldini from Italy passed him and got the gold. Another guy passed him, got the silver, and de Lima got back in and got bronze. Most famous bronze medal winner ever in that Olympic race. I was given that illustration at a men's conference in Pennsylvania, and a man came up afterwards. He said, you know, he Googled Vanderlei de Lima. He said, you know, he got the highest award the IOC ever gives, and it's way above gold. Rarely given. The IOC rarely gives that award. And they gave it to Vanderlei de Lima because he got blindsided and didn't quit. He got back in the race. And I thought, what an illustration for us. You know, you're going through life sometimes, bang, you get hit. And you thought, I didn't see that coming. What are you going to do? Chuck it all? Get blindsided? Or are you going back in the race? Continuing on. Crossing the Red Sea, crossing the Jordan, going into Canaan, getting the perfect will of God done. How excited are we actually about the opportunity to give the gospel, which is the only hope to a lost and dying world? I mean, how does that grip us? What does that do for us? May God, by His grace, do such a work in our own hearts. And my wife and I were coming back from South America. We were in Brazil, and it was when 2016 Summer Olympics were there, and they had the last runner to light the Olympic torch, and it was Vanderlei de Lima, because he was from Brazil, and the Olympics in 16 were in Brazil, and he was the one chosen to light that Olympic torch. Years after, he was blindsided and got back in the race. And what do we have to look forward to? Unto him. If you read Hebrews chapter 10 in conjunction with this, you'll see, don't lose heart. Stay patient, because God will give the reward. Paul says, I have fought, I have finished, I have kept. They're all perfect tenses. Paul didn't say, I became perfect. No, he said, I have been running. I have been fighting. I have been finishing. What was he saying? I didn't give up. Henceforth, he said, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give. And we need to look forward to the henceforth. Keep on plowing for God's purpose and for God's glory. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.